and are still doing that, you are still waiting for boxes and half a day. There's things on a tree. The world starts to get in the middle of the streets.
Good morning, honourable chairperson, honourable members, good morning. Thank you for hosting us here this morning. I am Graham Abrahams. I'm the vice chairman of the South African Society of Arctic Sport. My colleague, Khalid Balant, is the CEO, and I'm sure there are some members who will be familiar with him. Our CFO, Bonke, he's still standing in the queue outside, but I'm sure he will join us as well once that is clear. Just before I go into the presentation, I know it's probably not a problem, but I want to express Sid's appreciation and thanks to you personally for taking us this morning to your conference. I think a lesson for all of us in South African society. When we take heed of what you have said around the roadway, I say it's so. So with that, Chair, generally this meeting is directed where we report on our financial position of the past financial year. However, we deemed it, with this being our first appearance before the committee in the sixth parliament, we made the assumption that quite a few of the members are new to the portfolio. So we thought we would just give you some background of who we are, what we do, and how we fit into the overall sporting framework in South Africa. So the South African Institute for Rugby Sport, which is a matter of fact based at the Newlands at the Sports Science Institute, and hopefully, Chair, one day we will be able to host the full committee there at our offices. SAIDS, as it is commonly known, is a public entity which was formed in 1997 already through an Act of Parliament, Act Number 14 of 1997. That Act was formed at a time, or was written and adopted by this Parliament at the time that sport became professionalized, where athletes started creating professions and careers out of sport. And with the important role sport plays in society generally and globally, there was a necessity globally to ensure that sport is what we call clean. In other words, that there's fair competition, that people compete on an equal basis, and hence we found the need globally for the establishment of a global body that will ensure that sport is free of doping. SAIDS was formed specifically through this Act of Parliament during the era of the late Steve Tredy. I'm sure all of us are familiar with him, who in actual fact played a key role in the establishment of SAIDS. Chair, obviously with this Act of Parliament being more than 20 years old, at that time we started with a very, very small budget and probably two staff members in the little room. The organization has grown. The whole anti-doping environment globally has grown, and it means, Chair, and I know the department has started the process, it means that we have to revisit the Act of that time, because many of the sections of the Act is outdated. It does not speak to the current realities. I know the Department of Sport, before it became Sport, Arts and Culture, have started that process of revising and updating the Act, and this committee will obviously be very critical in that. And as SAIDS, we are available to this committee as support in anything which you need to be discussing once that Act or the draft revised Act reaches you. So, SAIDS is the South African government's in actual fact implementing body to ensure adherence and compliance with the UNESCO Convention Against Doping in Sport. And very simply put, is that our function is to ensure that athletes do not use substances which are prohibited to improve performance, to enhance performance. So we are affiliated to the World Anti-Doping Agency, whereby, and I will touch on it later on, whereby there is the World Anti-Doping Code, which is currently also being revised, and from January 2021, the revised code will be implemented. In actual fact, later this year, we are going to Poland, where the revised Act will be adopted for implementation in January 2021. As far as governance is concerned, Chair, we are responsible to the Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture. He appoints the board according to the Act, and the current board was appointed by the then Minister on the 1st of December 2017. The board and our executive management, our senior management team, account directly to the minister and to Parliament through this committee on our annual financial position and our operational performances. You ensure that we get the funding, and hence we report to you that in line with the Act and also in line with the rules of Parliament. As I said to you, the SAIDS board was appointed in 2017. And we're in office until 2022. Our chairman of the board is Judge Lex Mpati. Judge has asked me to convey his apologies to you. He's been involved in government responsibilities since January this year. He's taken leave of absence from SAIDS to pay his full attention to the commission of inquiry that he's heading. But still very much remains abreast of developments, and he has asked me who not only convey his apologies to each honorable member here, but also his best wishes. I am the deputy chairman, and then we have a range of other board members, Dr. Kaborsi, Professor Linda Spau, Dr. Harold Adams, who served previously on this board, Dr. Shoaib Manjra, who also served previously on this board, Dr. Patu Zondi, who is also the CEO of the Sports Science Institute here in Cape Town, Professor David Beheber, Dr. Maria Pienza, and Matthew Kuhn, who is an athlete representative on the board. What is the vision of SAIDS? Our vision is very simple: to shape and develop an ethical agency. That is what SAIDS is, an agency that is the leading authority on anti-doping matters and ethics in sport, both in South Africa and the continent. And that is what we strive towards as far as our vision is concerned. Our core activities, so there are four core activities that we focus on. The first one is what we call doping control or drug testing in sport. So all testing takes place against what we call a doping risk profile. And this doping risk profile is in actual fact implemented in conjunction with a global list of banned substances and methods in sport. We do not put that banned list of substances together. That is done by the World Anti-Doping Agency. We implement it as a signatory and a member of the World Anti-Doping Agency. We also investigate cases pertaining to the trafficking of banned substances in sport, and in particular steroids. It must be said, Chairperson, that it is not athletes on their own who become involved in using banned substances. There are quite a number of intermediaries involved in that, and our investigations are also aimed at finding the suppliers. So we have with different agencies in South Africa, we have relationships who assist us in the investigative processes, in actual fact, because we will never get rid of the scourge if we do not find the persons who supply these banned substances to our young athletes. Our adjudication processes, Chair, it's independent, completely independent. We call it results management. The board and the management of SAIDS have nothing to do with that process. That process is done by an independent tribunal who have no direct link with SAIDS. And there is also what we would call an appeals board, which is also independent. And that's a fact, Chair, over this past weekend, starting on Friday and Saturday, both the appeals board and the tribunal had training here in Cape Town. We have a process of ongoing training. We put people through annual training to stay ahead of new developments, to share experiences, and more importantly, to bring new people into this process as well. And we were privileged this year to have two international experts to assist us in that regard. Anti-doping education, Chair. So whilst testing is one way of dealing with it, education is critical in this regard. And we are involved in a number of initiatives around fair play, around prevention, around ethics, and the dangers of substance abuse. Quite often, I think, those who use these substances are not aware of the health risks it poses, especially to young people. And later on, you will see why they refer specifically to young people. So education is key to us. Of course, like all other government entities, it's always a question of funding as well. And whilst we would love more funding to deal with education, we understand the constraints which government faces in that regard. International collaboration, we can never operate in isolation in South Africa. It is critically important for us to be successful. that we collaborate around best practices on the continent, but also globally. Capacity building is important, and within the African continent, SAIDS is critical in giving support to various countries. In actual fact, we have partnerships with various African countries, including Nigeria, and the CEO will touch on that a bit later on as well. So we also involve globally, as I say, in global forums. We involve in the African Union. And Chairperson, I want to thank you in particular and your members who have been partaken in the recently held African Union Forum, which you attended. We really appreciate the support that you and members have given us in this regard. Then there is, of course, what is known as WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and the UNESCO Conference of Parties. So government is critical in this role that we play. In actual fact, our minister, by virtue of his position, serves as a foundation board member responsible or accountable for Africa. And he represents Africa at those forums. Compliance and financial management, we have to comply with UNESCO, we have to comply with WADA, ISO 900, and obviously the PFMA and Treasury guidelines. So whilst we have compliance issues which come out of this honourable committee and Parliament, we also have to comply with issues around the World Anti-Doping Agency. And that gives us, in actual fact, a double opportunity to ensure that as far as governance is concerned, that we sound on governance and that we comply with all the requirements in the anti-doping environment. Just a quick glance, Chairperson, over the last financial year. Over the last financial year, we did a total of 1,584 tests. Now, a couple of years ago, Chairperson and honourable members, we did in excess of 3,000 tests. But as technology increasingly plays a role, as investigations continuously play a role, we have managed to bring this down substantially, and obviously for financial reasons as well. Because for one test, the approximate cost is 4,400 rand, which had to come out of our budget. But that is just for the test. So when an athlete comes and defends his or her case, and then go on to appeal, and even to CAS, which is based in Switzerland, the costs skyrocket. In actual fact, on average, for one case that goes to CAS, in Switzerland, the arbitration court in Switzerland cost us a minimum of 750,000 rand. So on a budget of slightly more than 20 million rand, you can imagine if three athletes take us to CAS, it costs us 3 million rand out of a budget of just over 20 million rand. So the costs are astronomical, but athletes and their agents and whoever works with them are increasingly wanting to challenge findings and decisions, and that in itself means that our resources are stretched to their limit. The code of sport which had which was tested the most was athletics, 427, and the total number of positive violations or positive doping cases was 47. And what is the most common substance which South African athletes abuse? Anabolic steroids. That in itself is a risk for the health of the athlete. Forget about the so-called advantages which they think they gain from using anabolic steroids. It's just the health risk. Rugby, Chairperson, I said to you, I will come back to you. There's a total of 16 positive doping cases, Chair, and this is the worrying part. 50% of that 16 are school children. And that's worrying. That's extremely worrying, and we do not necessarily, we cannot categorically state what the what is causing that. But it's pressures on young people to perform. It comes from the coaches, it comes from the parents, it comes from the principals, it comes from the teachers, it comes from them themselves. So that is a worrying aspect. And hence, when I touched on education, we certainly need to be focusing a lot more on education in our school kids, given despite our budgetary constraints. Jefferson, that is the first section. I just want to again emphasize what I said up front. We are grateful for the support of this committee. And Jefferson, there was a young man who joined us, I think, just over 3 years ago. He joined us just over 3 years ago. Before that, we outsourced our financial functions because our budget was just too small. About 3 years ago, we decided that we need to bring it in-house, and we interviewed a young man. And 2 years ago, I personally put him to a challenge, and I said to him, prove to us that you can do the proper thing for SAIDS by ensuring what the committee would like to hear as far as our finances are concerned. I can safely say, in his presentation today, he has delivered. I want to introduce you. He's to my right, Funky, and we'll take a look at that. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, just before Funky starts, you would have received a hard copy of the annual report. We'll hand it out to you. The annual report deadline is the end of September that we have to submit to Parliament and the Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture will table it in the Parliament. When we got the invitation last Thursday for the committee meeting, we rushed our publishers to print the copy so that we can bring it to you to Parliament. So we apologize that we could only get a brief this morning. But the normal deadline will be 2 weeks from now to be handed over at the end of the
session. So, Honourable Chairperson, so we're actually giving the Honourable Members a sneak preview of what should actually be with you at the end of September.
Thank you. Very good morning to the Chair and the members of the Council, as well as the fellow secretary present. My name is Onte Mare and I'm the CEO of the States. My presentation will start with our audit report for the 2018-19 financial year. On the financial statements, we received around 25.4 million with no material findings. On compliance with legislation, again, we received an unqualified opinion with no material findings. In the prior year, we had a finding on compliance relating to revenue and relating to collection of low outstanding taxes. And in the 2018-19 year, that area improved very much. We also do not have an emphasis of net apparent loss relating to the financial position of the entity for the year. Last year, we had, as our assets and our net liabilities that exceeded our assets. In the 2018-19 year, I'm proud to say that now our assets can exceed our liabilities. In layman's terms, which is a term that THG doesn't use, in the offshore documents, we have managed to achieve a team mortgage. If I break down our performance in the financial statement, in 2018-19, we generated a surplus of 2.5 million. Versus a surplus of 2.2 million in the prior year. Our financial position is in net asset, not in net liability anymore, with an accumulated surplus of 492,000 rand. The surplus generated in the current year has managed to reduce the accumulated deficit we had in the prior year, which was 2.6 million, and now we're in a positive position. The entity will continue to practice austerity measures and budgetary controls to prevent incurring any deficit. Going forward and to maintain a positive financial position. On performance information, we received a confirmed factor that conclusion was they performed within the assurance services of the assurance, so they give us a conclusion not an opinion. It's an unconfirmed factor with the conclusion with no findings. All our objectives were indicated to clearly defined. And all our targets and effort must be accurately disclosed. We have disclosed, however, in our financial statements, an amount of the rate of expenditure of 85,000 rand. This arose as a result of part of the spending on the international contract. The contract was a clear contract with SMBMT for internal services to the amount of 95,000 rand. The contract ends on 15 December and it continues on 2006. At the Grand March, the total expenditure on the contract was 580,000, resulting in a spending of 85,000. This is the amount that is disclosed in our hands. All the expenditure incurred on the contract was estimated to be and agreed upon with management and the standard and condition by the our audit committee and the members of the board. What we have done as an entity is submit an application to Treasury for the following. One, to condone the reinvestment that is already disclosed. Two, to authorize any further expenditures that we will incur on the contract with the fund as well as our debt. And we also apply for the extension of the contract until 2022. One, for continuity services and because the services that were provided to us by SABMT have been of a high standard. We have also disclosed an amount of 20,000 rand, which is put as investment expenditure. This arose as a lot of penalties and interest from SARS as a result of the debt financing of the EMP format and the deposit, which resulted in payment of various requests for the amount of problems. This is an isolated event that is now possibly monitored so it doesn't happen again. And what we have done as an entity is applied to SARS at the end of the interest rate. But we have not yet this year, and it's not doing so much happier than it's not. Looking at the current year now, our budget allocation from the department is 25.6 million, which is a 5.4 increase from the prior year. To date, we will receive half of the grant, which is 50%, because the grant is paid in two tranches. The first tranche was received on 14 June 2019. We had to operate for 2.5 months without any funding from the department. The second tranche is due in October and we will liaise with the department on the phasing of that. The expenditure we have to technically will be incurred to date as at the end of August is approximately 10 million of the budget, which is 99%. So versus 30% in the prior. And part of the reason is that we held a public control officer at the educational workshop in June. In the past year's workshop occurred in the second quarter, which is around September. And we also have ad hoc value, which is the lottery card. The budget amount for the year is at about 4 million. And last year was 4.9. This is a carryover of lottery funds that have remained. What we spent to date is 730,000 rand. The reason that grants are carried over is we have experienced challenges in spending the grants in the prior. One, collaboration with the Department of Basic Education not materialized due to little or no response from the department. Secondly, an NGO we had collaborated with on schools' education in the form of a drama, first are unexpectedly, and the project had to cease. Lottery funding is being fed and cannot be spent on anything other than the project assessed by the lottery agreement. So, what we have done now is we have submitted a request to lottery to redirect the funds to more viable projects and more urgent projects for the entity and where there is financial pressure. And that concludes the
thank you. Thank you. Okay, Chair, that is our presentation, we again want to thank you and the committee for having hosted us. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, again, I want to start off by saying that I don't like coming to meetings unprepared without being able to look through information at all. I've really looked through my emails and I asked my colleague if she got anything on the finances. I did not receive anything. I would like to know from our officials, please, to check the email address if it was sent, because I definitely did not receive anything at all. The second part, I did not pick up on the meeting 2 weeks ago, Chairperson. It was said that we actually lost our accreditation at our centre in Bloemfontein for almost a year and a half of our testing. And these samples all had to be, I think it was over a year, if I'm correct. I asked the question, and the presenter then said to us that these samples were sent abroad for testing. Testing did take place, but at extravagant costs. I would like to know what this cost was, because I don't see it anywhere here. From what I've seen, there's no cost to sending samples overseas, and I just see that they were in the budget, etc., etc. But I don't see if you send samples overseas, and our presenter told us as well that it costs 4,400 per test, approximately. So then Mr. Abrams said to us, and if you go to CAS in Switzerland, then you can go up to 750,000. So I need to understand the test that was sent overseas, what did that cost you per test? And then, is this not the reason why you only did half the testing? Because you were saying to us that previously you did 3,000 etc. tests, now only 1,500. And your reason for that is because of technology, which I dispute, to be quite frank. Because then, if it was the 3,000 etc., then your cost would have been much more. than on the finances that we've seen here today. So I'd like you to give an explanation on that. And what is this? Then the second part of that question is, why did we lose our accreditation? What was the reason for that? Who was responsible to see to it that we have our accreditation in place? Why did we lose our accreditation at our state-of-the-art center in Bloemfontein? Thank you, Chair. I will first rest with those two questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My question is, the first one is, which sport is most affected by drugs in South Africa? And my other question would be, since the state is not listing the types of drugs that need to be detected by the my question is, are all countries being exposed to similar drugs? And which country do you identify with as you work with different countries? And because of your budgetary constraints and that you want the tests, my question would be, how do you cut your tests, and what criteria are you using to cut those tests? And and what, which sector of sport, and what is the reason, basically? I'm question that you spoke about austerity measures that is in place. What are those austerity measures? So far, I have those petitions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me firstly welcome to the report. I have other questions as others, because I also wanted to know why is the decline, because you said that the people's workforce is nearly 50%. So I want to know, because we know, to try to explain a little bit the same about the financial constraints. The other thing that I want to also understand is that if you can check on your, I don't know, the web summary for, there is this thing of to say that if you are checking on your, just check Google, your APPs and other things, but somehow it seems as if everything is going also down according to the percentage when it comes to the testing of blood, urine, and so what are the challenges? Because the other thing you said that with the priority of school education, so we just want to know your plan about the school education, because we've got 9 provinces. How do you plan, in which provinces do you prioritize which side? Because we're also having a passionate to say, let us also take these processes to deep for one of us. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. And let me also welcome the presentation from SAINTS. I have a number of questions, Chair, but I'll run fast. With this program, do you see an impact? That's my feeling, so because hand on the program, but we don't see the impact, we don't see the results. So how do we change the way we do things? Or we can test the results and continue with it. And I know we're still going to receive a report sometime during the course of the year. But I'm just interested to know how many full-time staff members do you have. Some answers might be in the book, but I haven't gone through the book as yet. And how is the fee structure of the board of directors? My apologies, because I'm new to this portfolio. Are you subjected to PFMA as an entity? I see a figure as a penalty for not submitting something at SAPS. Is the penalty this figure we see here? Or my simple question is, how much is the SAPS penalty? And the CFO said the organization spent 2.5 months without receiving a command from the department. What is the reason why? Unfortunately, the department is not here. Why was that challenge not given? And how did you survive? Which leads to my next question, whether you have other sources of income. Accept what you get from the department. And how much is the grant from mutual care now? And how much is the annual budget that you receive from the department next year?
That you, it wasn't accredited, that you must meet the international standards. I want to know from you, how is this about to be supported in the first place, and what do you, from your side, your entity, what does your entity do to support it, and what would you suggest should be done to avoid something like what has happened, because it's in South Africa and it's actually an asset for this country, so we need to look after that. We should be proud that we can actually accommodate this facility. On page 30, rather 11, the Board of Directors, page 39, the gender and diversity scales, and on all of these pages, the representation of women are actually in the board. There's only 30% female. The Doping Control Review Commission, 100% male. The Therapeutic Use Exemption Commission, 33% female. I want to know, what are you doing to address the gender inequality? Also on page 44, Doping Control Officers, only 36% female. What is the reason for this and how do you address that? Then on page 30 of the annual report, it says that when you do this correctly, it's not. I see that in the administration stands at 64% personnel. Is that the correct figure? And does that mean that only 36% go towards actual of the annual report? Number of the report, not reasonable, but page 50 on the top, oversight statistics, personnel cost by program. I just want to make sure the administration, is that only in comparison to all the programs? Is this a claim to be in terms of all the health equity? Is it 64% of all the money goes to employees or personnel? Or if you can just make that clear for me. I can't find in the annual report the board meetings and the expenditure that goes with that. I can also not find the travel expenditure for abroad and local. And then also, these on page 71 of the annual report. Can maybe also explain that to me. These education program, how much is on? It's not clear for me. Maybe you can explain. 2018, the amount was 2328, and the education is now 1307. And in just to the bottom, the international relation is has gone up to 791. And I want to know how this international relation benefits us more than the education program. Because you just mentioned in your presentation that the education program is actually very important. So why would you then put a higher price to international expenditure on international liaison to, instead of to the education part? Okay, that's all from me. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the members for the questions. What we will attempt to do, Chair, is to answer all the questions you have noted it down, so that we will do it jointly between myself and my colleagues. I want to start with the opening remark by the Honourable Member around prior information. Perhaps I must address that, and I know you directed that committee. So, Honourable Chairperson, this meeting has to take place tomorrow. On Friday, it was changed, and we acceded to come today. At the same time, we were having a full 2-3-day workshop, starting Friday, Saturday, Sunday, until yesterday. What, at the outset, when I made the presentation, I indicated to the Honourable Members that because I knew it was a new Parliament, the 6th Parliament, and that would be many new members, that I wanted us not to confine ourselves to the finance. So we submitted the finance to the Secretary as per request. I then asked them, after it was submitted, to indicate that there's another part of the presentation which I wanted to add to it. So if the fault lies by us, then my apologies to the members. We do want to comply. We obviously, having the first clean audit, we obviously wanted to comply. So That is the explanation, Jeff. As far as the lab is concerned, I'm going to ask the CEO to come in here as well. I want to point out to other members that the lab is totally independent of SAIDS. Totally and completely independent of SAIDS. It is housed at the University of the Free State. And it is, let's say, administered by the University of Free State, but it is a South African laboratory. We have to be very, very careful of SAIDS, of arm's length between ourselves and them. So whilst they are a service provider to us, so whilst we use their services and we're obviously their primary client, we have a real interest. And you are correct, Honourable Member, we have to ensure that the lab is sustainable. I think you touched on that, the sustainability of the lab. And I think over the last perhaps 18 to 24 months, we have taken all those measures together with the Department of Sport, together with the Free State University, who has been great in cooperating. The lab is back on track, I can say. I'm going to ask the CEO to deal with the costs in particular. First, the accreditation of the lab, I think that's a good point. Secondly, the cost of overseas tests as comparison to local tests.
Thank you, Chair. Just to reiterate that the South African Doping Control Laboratory is housed in Bloemfontein at the University of Free State and falls under the management supervision of the Vice Rector of the University. It's only funded by the University. Again, the laboratory is a service provider to SAIDS, so we do have to have an arm's length relationship, and the governance standard in the World Health Organization has even become stricter between the relationship of the anti-doping organization and the laboratory in the case of the scandal that happened in Russia, where there was too close a relationship and collusion between the laboratory and the anti-doping organization, and then most recently in Romania, where the my counterpart in Romania was also had also oversight over the laboratory. So those governance protocols have been made even stricter than previously. But we do support the lab. We do write letters of support that we will guarantee them a certain number of samples. We do include them in our capacity building training with the AU forum. We had a members came that was a laboratory that hosted the members, and we gave them that forum to do some business development with our African countries. So we work closely with the laboratory to support the initiatives. It's in our interest. The reason why we had a deficit two financial years ago and why we had to work towards a surplus to address that large deficit was the cost that we incurred, especially leading up to the Olympic year, which was real, where we had to do testing as required by the international sports federations, and our samples went to Doha, Qatar, to Ghent, Belgium, and also sometimes, in some cases, to Salt Lake City or Montreal, Canada. And what drove those costs for the test was not only the courier cost of transportation, but also the rand-dollar exchange, and that we were not able to negotiate the favorable rates that you can with Bloemfontein compared with the other laboratory. So it's in our immediate interest, not only as a national asset, for the Bloemfontein lab to retain its accreditation, but also for them to be our leading service provider. I think that we can do the specific cost. We'd have to calculate from our previous annual reports what the exact courier cost and the foreign exchange loss was incurred when they did the overseas test. The reduction in test numbers started, you can see on we have a historical graph in the annual report where you can see the increases and decreases in testing. There are a large number of factors that contribute to the fluctuation of the of the numbers every year, whether it's Olympic year, World Cup year. So from 2019 to 2020, we bring 40 next year, you'll see there's a slight increase in the number of guests that we are projecting and working on now because of the Olympic year in Tokyo next year, the World Cup year of rugby, the World Cup year of netball, the World Cup year of cricket and World Championship. So those are factors that also influence numbers. The fact that numbers have decreased over the past few years is a large result because of having to manage our costs using overseas laboratories. But technology plays and efficiency plays a huge role. And again, those are the international standards that we have to comply with. Years ago, when we did 3,000 tests, the operative word in the World Anti-Doping Code was random. And some journalists would still use this, some athlete was randomly tested, or all sport codes have to be tested. So whether you are bridge or chess, you know, we have to test it as ridiculous as it may sound. The World Anti-Doping Code now gives us more flexibility in terms of how we develop a test plan. And as the chairman mentioned, or our chairman mentioned, it's based on a doping risk profile. Again, in the annual report, I think it's about 50-odd sport codes that we've tested, and they are divided into different risk categories, with athletics, rugby, swimming, track and field, cycling being in the higher risk. And although football is the most commonly played sport in South Africa, has the highest commercial value, it's doping risk. Football and cricket falls in the middle from a doping risk profile, and that's physiology, the number of historical tests, and we can recall the last doping scandal in football was about 3 years ago with a county chief player who tested positive for an illicit drug rather than a performance enhancing drug. So if you see the breakdown of tests and you look at the number, you can reasonably assume what is high risk, medium risk, and low risk. Sport. So those are all factors that inform the testing, and in terms of also the reduction in testing, testing has become more expensive, but also we've become more efficient and effective. Through that reduction, if you will look at our historical figures, the number of positive tests has not decreased. When we did 3,000 tests, we actually, in a percentage basis, had less positive tests than when we're doing 1,500 odd tests. And it's because in the 20 the year we're reporting, at least 6% of the positive tests are based on intelligence information, a targeted test, and information that we have and in terms of our doping risk profile that we targeted athletes. And in that way, and because we had information that they were cheating. So those are various numerous variables that inform the quantity of tests that we do each year. And we have this discussion with both the Department of Sport and Treasury because to caution them as a reverse incentive as we gain efficiencies, not to penalize us by reducing our funding, but to look at how we expand on our education, our independent results management, and also how we extended money on investigative services and our partnerships with SAPS and the VORPS. The further questions are all countries being exposed to the type of testing. That is why our work, our collaboration in Africa and with the African Union is so critical. The primary complaint one of the APU is that the committee calls representatives from the top sports in South Africa that is tested. Players from, and I'm talking about the top tier players, the Springboks, the Wayfarnikes, those type of athletes, do this forum and you ask them about testing. They are happy to be tested in South Africa, they never complain. What they're not so happy about is when they can compete, you know, like 2 weeks ago at the African Games in Morocco, and they're running against someone in lane two or swimming against someone in lane three. That is the first time that those athletes have been tested. And that is where our work with the African Union is critical, that all African athletes have to be tested on a similar vein And that is primarily our challenge with our colleagues in Nigeria. Nigeria is the most populous country in sport. And ideally, they should be, in terms of anti-doping, they should be the number one anti-doping agency on Africa, not the South African Institute. And I don't mean that in a competitive basis, but merely in a numbers basis. So, yes, all African countries are not testing their athletes as equitably as South Africa. But then South Africa, as Mr. Abrams mentioned, is recognized for its expertise by its collaboration, capacity building, our sharing of expertise. Our UNESCO serves on the Wada Foundation Board. Again, we have numerous exchanges with our African counterparts to bring them up to the level that's accepted. The SAIDS is recognized as a top 10 tier global agency in anti-doping in terms of our testing and capacity. We don't hold that, or it's not a competition or a proprietary business that we hold on. We don't make money out of it, but we do share it with our African colleagues. Which sport is mostly affected by doping? I mentioned athletics is the most tested sport, but the sport with the most number of positives is rugby. And bear in mind, this is the top level competition. It's not, we're not testing the club meet or the club race, but generally, athletics and rugby is the most affected by cheats, by doping, not only in South Africa. Globally, everyone constantly with the marathon and the team in the European athletes report hundreds of thousands of millions of rands then either is not given back or someone loses out of that boost where athletes is cheating, and then obviously the scandal in international athletics. There have been no scandals specifically around doping in other big sports, like football. So sports that are generally affected by doping globally is athletics, cycling, and in South Africa, it's athletics, rugby, and to an extent, cycling. Okay, our CFO will talk on the austerity measures with respect to education. Again, the pages on education outlines the programs that we do on the different levels, and we've been clear, we're trying to be clear to illustrate, there's a hands down from this committee, how our distribution is in terms of the provinces, but not only that, but urban rural divide in terms of the delivery of our services. What has to be taken into account in terms of anti-doping is not if you call SASCOF, or Sports Federation, they have to deliver sport throughout the country to the masses. Anti-doping happens, drug testing happens, or mainly happens at the elite level. So sport, the work and interaction with sport activities, events, and federations is going to have an urban bias, and it's going to be towards the provinces that hold a higher proportion of the international and national competition. But we do make an effort to have a good distribution throughout the country in terms of education outreach programs, not only testing, but other education programs that we do host. But again, that we don't operate in isolation. We operate in partnership with the National Federation. So when Tolofelo and BSA does a roadshow in the Eastern Cape, we will partner with them when they do education on safety in boxing, or when there's, I know a lot of our DCOs and education officers look forward to an event in the Northern Cape when they have the X Games, because we really go to Kimberley for those for any event type of activity. The impact of education and the outreach and various education campaigns, as any services that is about change of behavior, it's a very long-term measurement tool that we use. We do report on the change of behavior In the annual report, we delivered something that we measure the knowledge base afterwards. But again, as you may know, anytime one is dealing with a service where you're trying to influence change of behavior, measurement tools become a bit of a challenge in the short term, and we try to measure it over the long term. The full-time staff members is 50 on page 10, but we have no vacancies or positions that we are not filled. And I'll tie the question on full-time staff together with part of austerity measures, but it's not so much austerity measures, but strategies and techniques to save money. Germany, if you recall, you had a committee member, honorable member, I'm not sure which party of the name, but the committee member or the member every year asked us questions around, not only about gender parity, about diversity, but also how we address disabled populations. We have a special program, and we got, and it's mentioned in our annual report. We partnered with the recruitment agency specifically to look at disabled people in our workplace, and SAFE does not have to pay the costs of that employee. It's funded through a special I think non-profit, the Levin Ackerman Foundation, and pays for the person's training and employment with us for a year. So those are some of the measures that we use, not necessarily austerity, but cost-saving measures where we can use money allocated for HR or personnel in different sense. We also leverage the internship program with the CETA, SAFE's called under CAT CETA, and CAT CETA provides us with an intern anywhere from 3 months to 6 months that is funded by them. The intern that we received in, that came to SAFE in 2017 was really, really good. And we had to, it would be folly for us to not have hired that person, and he is flourishing now. But we have currently, CETA has approved an internship for an education administrator, anti-doping education administrator, and we carry currently in the advertising and recruitment phase for that internship. The international liaison, as opposed to the education cost, international liaison is funded through the Treasury. Through our Treasury grant, and education is overwhelmingly, I think, only close to 87% is funded through the lottery, through the lottery grant. So it's from a just a row and common financial perspective, those numbers are apples and oranges. They are drawn from different buckets, but Honky can talk more on that. The fee structure of the board, we are a public entity 3A, so we comply with remuneration for our board and audit committee according to those schedules of a public entity 3A. It is listed on page 87. The meetings attended and the remuneration associated with both audit and board committee members. And in terms of compliance with national legislation, yes, we do have to comply with the PFNA. With respect to gender parity, overall in the organization, we do have a specific plan in collaboration with the Department of Labor. And we have complied with our employment equity plan that the Department of Labor set out for us. That doesn't mean that we've achieved all the gender parity targets, but for the 2018-19 year, we have achieved and complied with those targets from gender, disability, and ethnicity. With respect to the DCOs and I think the 36% female ratio that we have, unfortunately, sport and the level of sport that we test in South Africa is predominantly male. So there are more males competing at the higher level in athletics. There are more male rugby teams on the Currie Cup international level. And presently ever, disabled swimming and cycling than female. Chair, if you recall, I think that if this is the sixth parliament, then it's the fifth parliament when you became the chair. Many members of the locomotive came to our offices in Newlands, and we did a demonstration of a drug test, and from that you could see that the drug test report is fairly invasive. The athlete, someone has to witness the athlete passing a sample from their body into a container. So the person has to be naked from the waist up to below the knees. For that reason, a male athlete has to be witnessed by a male DCL and a female athlete by a female DCL. And that is a contributor to the slight disparity that we have with the gender. Anki will talk about the specific figures that was raised with the 64%. In terms of the DBE collaboration, again, the Department of Sport about 4 or 5 years ago set up a working group and task force to have to decide where school sport is going to sit, whether it's going to sit in SRSA or with the Department of Basic Education. Is that right or wrong? It was agreed between the two departments that school sport would sit in the Department of Basic Education, and that should be collaborated with. Unfortunately, that department, especially the unit that deals with the school act with respect to illicit drugs, drug testing, or what we refer to Annex A of the school act, there's been a raft of retirements. If I recall from November last year, they do have a director now, after not having a director for a year and a half, she has been hiring personnel. But unfortunately, with the collaboration, it was not only the slow pace of the communication with DBE, but the NGO that was appointed to a tender process to do the drama or edu-drama in education through schools in 6 provinces, that NGO was found to have other financial problems or governance problems and was shut down. As Anki mentioned, we did inform the lottery with the primary funder, and that money is ring-fenced, and lottery is in the process of granting us permission to reallocate that money from that project, but still under the anti-doping limitation umbrella. Chair, just a final point before I hand over to Anki. You expressed your concern about the, I gather you were saying, let's not twiddle our fingers while Rome is burning with respect to drug use and abuse in the country. And you asked, what can this committee do on that? One of our board members is David Bahava, and some of you, if you have been on the Portfolio Committee on Sports, on Social Development, may recognize him. He used to be the chair of the Central Drug Authority. The Central Drug Authority is a multi-department body, intercepted, that tries to coordinate drug awareness and drug combat initiatives. And your question was, what can this committee do? The Central Drug Authority has been moribund for at least the last 3 years, and I would encourage the committee to ask questions of your colleagues in social development and why the committee has been, or why the Central Drug Authority has not been operational. SAGE also received funding in 2009 from the Central Drug Authority specifically to address steroid use in schools. Chair, you also mentioned the issue of the sources of drugs, and specifically mentioned countries like Nigeria. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position to answer questions on whether Nigeria is doing those drugs or what they are responsible. I would request that the law enforcement colleagues of the chair position to answer those questions. I hope I've addressed some of the more than welcome to point out to me what they've missed, but I'm sure we'll touch on the two financial questions that I've missed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The austerity measures that we have put in place is one, we abide by economic and financial practices, so we are pretty consistent. And we try as much as we can to use our paid sources for all our services, except for those that we can't. For instance, for test kits, we can't. There's only one African supplier that can supply those test kits, and those are international, and they're so far higher. And the other measure we put in place is like, we now send our samples to the lab in detection. We collect the sample and we fix it in a freezer in the office, and then we send the infection instead of sending the sample. Also, what we have done now is also our budget is keeping control in that it goes to a 3 people sign up. Whichever department in our entity requires the services, the manager of that department has to sign up first. And then it will come to me to see that all the requirements of procurement have been followed. I will sign off, and then the CEO will sign off. That way, we all are aware what is happening with our budget. And to go back to the question on the cost of sending samples overseas, 2016, our prayer cost was 1.7 million, and the lab cost was 8.3 million. Because that's when the lab first cost its accreditation. Then in 2017, our prayer cost increased to 2.4 million, and our lab cost was 5.5 million. And then in 2018, the courier cost was 1.5 million and the lab cost was 4 million. In 2019, our courier cost was 1.8 and our lab cost was 4.5 million. And then to go back to your question on how we survived for 2.5 months without funding, we can't control whether the departments decide to disperse that money to us. What we do is at the beginning of this financial year, we communicate with them, send them a draft of their service level agreement, and then we ask them what other information we need from us in order for them to release the funds. Unfortunately, we can't control when they release the funds. And each year it's the same issue. The financial year starts in April, but for as long as I've been in sales, we always receive the fund either late in May, and this year was a special receipt in mid-June. We have no control over that. What kept us going is we had a surplus in the plan and we have the financial control. So whatever money was there from the previous year, that helped us go through. And whatever natural fund we had on our hands at that point. And in terms of the lottery fund, a lottery fund is not a yearly fund. It's not due to us, we have to apply for it. It's up to the lottery to give us the funding. It's at home, it's not guaranteed. And in terms of the SRSA grant, for the prior year, the budget was 4.3 million, and for the current year, it's been 5.6 million. And to answer your question on the 64%, that 64% of the aggregate cost only, not of the entire budget. And as if I break it down to the entire budget, then our cost of personnel is obviously 5% of our entire budget. The SARS penalty, the amount for that is 20,000 rand, and that is on page 32 of the annual. And I don't know if there's anything else I missed.
Jefferson, I think we're trying to answer as many of the questions as we need. So if there are any gaps, we would like to make it.
Thank you.
Thank you, G. I just have a quick question on the non-executive directors, the board members on page 87. If you can just explain to me that table, because I don't understand, I'm not sure. I asked what the remuneration was, and also where does the 20 or the 25 comes from, and what is the amount? You can 250,000, or is it even amounts? You can just tell that table to us. And, I'll keep some.
And Chair, my question is, since the chats are controlled by the University of Free State, how true or false will the statement be that mainly the elite sport is being catered for the chats, and hence the cuts of the chats? And another one is, how democratic are the chats if they are being mainly based on intelligence and targeted information. Thank you.
I will explain the table on the board. If you look at the headings, the first one says number of meetings. Those numbers show how many meetings the member attended. And the second column says honoria, and that's how much we paid them for the meeting. And the third column says for the meetings. And the third column says subsistence and reimbursements. That's if they incur any extra cost in our service.
It's the end of reimbursement.
And the column that says total adds the honoria and the subsistence and reimbursements. Thank you. And the total cost for the year for board members of 155,000.
Thank you, Richard. What the question for the honourable member, the University of Free State does not control the test. They are a service provider. We control who will be tested and how we test, what the event and which athlete will be tested. And that, what we call the TDP, which is the test institution plan, that is developed in a framework established by the international standard, which is called the international standard for testing intelligence, which is part of policy, but the implementing policy for the world as well as well. In terms of the democracy of testing, we, and this is why I'd like Chair to have the committee members come visit us and say to be. Testing is no notice, and testing is a deterrent. And what we learned from the Lance Armstrong, Sauger, and others, Sauger, is athletes are able to beat the system because they're able to predict the testing. And they learn the testing pattern. So we have a testing pattern, it's our proprietary information. And if you are a Springbok athlete, an Olympic athlete, a Protea cricketer or netball player, playing at that level, provincial and upward, you can reasonably expect, based on the rules of the sport, that you may be tested after a game or may be tested out of competition when you practice or at your home. So there's no democracy in the testing. That will defeat the deterrent effect of testing.
Thank you.
chair and members to be able to see you in our offices.
Thank you to the committee as well for receiving us. The copy of the presentation was provided to me the past week, so we will be looking into the secretary to assist us with the to access it because we need the I think, Chair, as it has been noted by the committee, there's two critical apologies that we would have to present. The first apology is from the board. Ordinarily, we're supposed to appear before this committee in the presence of board members. In terms of the diary, we were initially saying to appear tomorrow, but I think the change that happened on Friday, which were communicated by the committee and received by the following day, we take that our board members on a full time. It was difficult for them to adjust the 15% of today. So we request that the committee pay with us that. I am, as the accounting officer, leading this delegation from Books in South Africa. It's very practice that we would have to uphold, but other circumstances we have had for taking in stride. My name is Tulu Fairolijaga. I'm the CEO at Books in South Africa since June 2016. To my left is the CFO who has joined the organization the same year, but in March 2016. To the far left is Mercy Ndidi or Moses, the Chief Operations Officer. The CFO is Taban Moses. The same name is English, but the first name is Juan, so it's Taban Moses. Mercy Ndidi Omo, on the far left, she's the Chief Operations Officer of Moses. Thanks. If members are already looking at copies, I can just then just look on my laptop. I don't know if they need to build the screens because. So, with that, I will then just open it directly from my laptop and I will speak. I will call out the slides as we go through. The last apology, I think, Chair, was with regarding and the late arrival. We tried to be on the queue to call at 8 minutes. For some reasons, even we were only processed at 9:54, so we have honestly apologetic that we arrived late. It's not something that we are proud of. In terms of the presentation structure, we have broken it into 5 pieces. Part A is the forward, which would have been presented by the board members, but I'm trying to summarize that. We will then do Part B, strategic overview, performance overview, as Part C, and the CFO will deal with the financial report, and then I will then deal with the last part. Just as a forward, our last appearance before this committee was on the 9th of October 2018, and then shortly thereafter, we then went and into a strategic plan session. I think the critical issue about the strategic plan was because we had just presented our annual report and there were some critical things that were flagged out by this committee for attention. We then went into the strategic plan, and in a nutshell, Chair, I will not necessarily follow the font in the presentation. If I'm allowed, I will just be clear and summarize it. In terms of what we picked up that since the boxing is back here, now the boxing is back here is the period after 2013, because in 2013 there was a national boxing in Ghana, which was convened by the National Department of Sport. But the critical purpose was to look into factors that were stifling the growth of boxing. So we then had that set of resolutions called the National Boxing Indaba Resolutions. Then out of the National Boxing Indaba, we went into that program which was called Boxing Is There, which was mostly on what we call boxing promotion, to try and get boxing back onto the television screens, but again to stabilize the state of affairs in boxing. So when we met in October and looked back at the 5-year period since 2013, the board's observation was that the upshot of this period led to a number of milestones. First, the stabilization of BSA governance and administration. Now, Chair, I think it's important that I must indicate that when we talk about this boxing governance and administration, between the periods 2014 and 2015, Boxing South Africa experienced, out of an organogram of 14 funded posts, an exodus of more than 6 different staff members dismissed. And this went to the highest level of administration, the CEO, the Chief Operations Officer, the CFO, the Manager of Human Resources and all that. So you can imagine when an organization loses within just 24 months 50% of its full-time personnel, what it does to business continuity. So there was a need to stabilize that, and I think that is why when I started, I indicated that most of us arrived then around 2016, around the same period, because we had to come in as part of what the board was doing to stabilize the organization. But as it is naturally the case, when you lose staff members through termination, dismissals, you are ultimately going to end up in litigations, because they will go to CCMA, others will go to labor court. And I think I'm painting this context so that when members relate with our financial performance, you will realize that there's a lot of burden that we have in respect of legal costs, because there's all these many cases that we still are facing and fighting in court. And I think that it is part of the reasons, again, that in the beginning of this year, one of the cases, which was a case against the former CEO, was finalized by the arbitration by CCMA. The arbitration outcome came, and it directed to a reinstatement, something that we, at this point in time, is going to be a court. So there's this burden or baggage that we have to deal with to ensure that we get back to proper equilibrium. And this is the window that we've been taking in stride, particularly in the past 2 to 3 years. But back to the issue of litigation, what the current management has tried to do has been to try and ensure that we do not create any further litigation. So we can at least confidently present to the committee that since 2016, there has not been any new matters that came and decided in Boxing South Africa being in court. All the matters that we are in court and dealing with are matters that precede the period of 2016. And we continue to deal with them with obviously the support of the department. The other issue is that there has been an increase in the Boxing South Africa budget baseline. Our budget, CFO will speak to that, is now at 12.1 million, which is the money that we received from the department. There was an increment in the period 2015-2016, but again, there's still an acknowledgement that when you look at our mandate and you look at our funding, there is a gap. And I think when we get to the end of the presentation, we will look at it better because we had previously presented this to the portfolio committee, and it's part of the work that continues to do with the department. The issue of the return of boxing broadcast, one of the biggest challenges is boxing broadcast, because if you look at the number of tournaments that we sanction in a year, less than 25% of that makes it to television. To give an example, in the past financial year, we have sanctioned 79 tournaments. And out of the 79 tournaments that we have sanctioned, not even one live broadcast was carried by the National Broadcaster. What it means is that whatever boxing content that you get to see on the national public broadcaster platforms is what is called canned. It's 2 weeks old, it's 3 weeks old, it's not live. The only people at this point in time in the past financial year who've been carrying live boxing broadcasts has been the pay channel, Supersport, to some extent, Quesit TV, which would then broadcast through Soweto TV platform, and Fox TV to some extent. And then the rest is what is live streaming. So, in the past, in this very committee, we have had to use very strong words against our national public broadcaster because we honestly felt let down. Because at some point, the arguments that we've had, the workshops that we've had one into, those were just abandoned, and I guess that they too have had bigger problems to deal with. So this issue of the boxing broadcast is still part of the challenges that the board noted that we are to deal with them. And I think part of what then informed our input towards the ICASA process was exactly this, because remember there was that ICASA sport broadcast review regulations where we made our own input, and I think this our input was informed by this reality that at the moment there's a lot of boxing content that South Africans don't get to enjoy because of the boxing broadcast blackout, particularly on the national public broadcaster platform. On a positive note, the return of the South African Boxing Awards. The recognition and reward element is a critical element of any sport development pathway. Sport people, by own nature, they would love that at some point it was recognized. So, since the year 2010, there were no boxing awards that took place. We brought them back in 2016, and they took place in 2017, 2011. 2018 in Port Elizabeth, and in the past year, in 2019, they then took place in 17. Boxing, development of women in boxing, a critical program again to try and make boxing a friendly space for the girl child. So, this is one of the programs that was introduced and will also give account on that. And then the new focus on development of sport of boxing. And then the rising profile of boxing locally and internationally. Because I think the point here that we're trying to make, change that, if you look at boxing dynamics internationally, there's a lot of excitement about boxing internationally. I think because of the good performance of the heavyweights, we live now in an era of your Anthony Joshua, your Tyson, Fury, your Wilder. So there's a lot of excitement, but the challenge is to translate that international excitement into local excitement as well, and that's part of the work that we will continue to do. Chair, on the second part, which is now the strategic overview, we're just looking at in that slide on the period under review, some of the highlights. A lot of confidence in South Africa's officials charges. I mean, we continue to get a lot of call ups from different world bodies. Most of our judges, I mean, for example, one of our referees from here in Cape Town, Dion Duarte, got a call up to officiate in the World Boxing Super Series in Russia, something that is quite big in the boxing space. And then, Chair, I think I must take a little easy on this one because this is an unprecedented development. In the past financial year, we were able to produce 6 world champions. It is not often that you find this type of output in our ranks of play. When the period 2018 first April began until 31st of March, Olisani Ngongeni became the WBF champion, world champion. Heggie Butler made history and actually won 2 world titles, the WBA and the IBF, and a Ring Magazine belt. Ring Magazine belt being one of the most elusive belts. I mean, the last time South Africa got a Ring Magazine belt was back in 1950 when Victor won that. So it has been a beautiful year. Thulani Mbenge became a world champion in the bantamweight. Mohiki Talani became a world champion. DJ Creel and on the female side, Nosy Poker on the very last day, the 1st of March, actually outpointed a fellow South African to become the world champion. So we're quite excited about that, and I think later on we'll just go through the actual statistics thereof. But it has been a beautiful year. The unfortunate thing is that because of the broadcast channels, not many South Africans could actually identify with this moment. But this was quite unprecedented. Zolani Tete's progression, Zolani was able to make it into the semi-finals of the bantamweight division of the World Super Series. Now, the World Super Series is like a world champion of professional boxing, so to speak, and we'll be speaking for that matter. And then in the 2018-2019 financial year, we sanctioned a total of 79 tournaments. We established also a medical commission because this commission had gone defunct. So we actually resuscitated in the previous year. And then we also developed and launched new national championship belts. So this is, I think, Chair, is just as an overview, some of the highlights for the period under review. In terms of the legislative and other mandates, Boxing South Africa is just like a state. It's also a public entity under 3A, which means that we receive our grant from the national department, but we are still allowed to raise revenue. We raise revenue through licensing of participants, so boxers, trainers, managers, promoters, they do take up license on annual business. We also raise revenue through sanctioning of tournaments. We are also able to raise revenue through grants. For example, we now have an application that we've launched with the National Lottery because we are also eligible to raise revenue through that. The act that governs us is the South African Boxing South Africa Act of 2001. We have a policy, boxing policy, which is the Boxing Regulations of 2004. Now, Chairperson, I think just to create a little context again around this. With our act being an act of 2001 and our regulations being of 2004, you notice that in the past 18 years there's not been an amendment to the act. There's not been also an amendment to the regulations. As a result, our legislative and regulatory framework has actually been overtaken by events in a lot of ways. And part of the diagnosis that we did was that until we attend to that issue of updating our legislative and regulatory framework, we will still continue to battle with a lot of other problems in a deep strategic level, because some of the things that we are changing are but reformatory amendments. But we actually need, if we are to do justice to the challenges facing boxing, we need to go deeper and harder than that. As a result, we have now put together the draft boxing regulations, something that in the past 15 years, the first time that we do that. The process obviously will then be for the minister to drive that amendment process of the regulations. And I think the intention is simply to update our processes, our systems, so that we are also at par with what the world does. And then we obviously are affected by other legislative pieces, more especially Safety, Sports and Recreation Events Act, the Labor Relations Act, Public Policy Management Act. those are some of the legislative pieces that we continue to operate under. In terms of chair, the structure, I just already mentioned that part, but the organogram of boxing South Africa, it's a bureaucracy of 14 people, all of us at our national office in Pretoria. What is the challenge here, Chairperson, is what is explained in the next slide of provincial control boards. In the past, before the 2001 Act, we had the 1954 Act, which was amended or repealed and replaced by the 2001 Act. In terms of the 1954 Act, the board would be constituted by 5 people. One as the chairperson at national, and then 4 as each one representing a province, because previously in the old order you had 4 provinces. When we amended that, or we repealed that act, we only had national office bearers. As a result, Boxing South Africa does not have provincial commissions. Critical structural limitation, because in the absence of provincial commissions, what we then have at provincial level is what we call service providers. They are not staff members, they are not office bearers. They are people contracted to render a specific service. It means there are certain functions that can then happen at provincial level. Sanctioning of tournaments, ratings of boxers, enforcement of discipline and disputes, all those type of things, they have to happen at national. And I think when we were talking about a need to amend and update the legislative framework, it's so that we address equally some of those limitations, because sporting codes happen at a coal phase, which is a local, district, and provincial level. And without, with a structure that does not have that, I think we will have a challenge. And I think, Chair, this is the narrative that you are going to see us coming very strongly on, Chair, because we will request the support of the portfolio committee in that. The same issue was raised in the National Boxing Indaba as well, that we honestly need to look at how to amend the Act so that this issue of provincial commissions get brought back in a proper way. Because with the Boxing Act being in Section 76B, then you don't have provinces budgeting for boxing. And that is the limitation. So I think we will request that the committee should share that out with us and reinforce us in our slides, so that we do proper justice to the issue. So in terms of performance overview, and I think I will probably start going a little faster here, because most of the initial anecdotes was to just create the context. Our annual performance plan, Chairperson, in the previous year we had problems with the annual performance plan, and this is part of the workload that it took a long time to complete with the auditor general, where some of the targets were not smart or measurable, and we had to do that work. We have since then concluded it, and the current annual performance plan, which was tabled by the Minister on the 24th March, we can confidently say that it had addressed all the limitations which in the previous year were set out by the Auditor General. Our annual report of the previous year, Chair, was tabled on the 28th of August and discussed by the Portfolio Committee on the 9th of October, which I initially indicated that it was our last appearance. Chair, in terms of the current annual report, the copies, I saw Saints brought their copies in, but our copies are here, Chair. They've been taken to the Ministry, and I take it that they will then be tabled through the Ministry, but we have already concluded the annual report, and then we just follow that process to ensure that they are properly tabled through the Executive Authorities Office. In terms of policy developments, during the period under review, we developed 14 internal policies. And the purpose for this, Chair, is really to strengthen our control environment, because we noticed that there's a over and above the legislative and the regulatory level, at norms and standards, standard operating procedures, there's still a lot of gaps. And this information is information that in the past 4 years, some of it used to be there in the organization. But when people get dismissed and all that, some information just disappeared. So we've had to do a lot of work to ensure that we recreate this policy framework and tighten the control measures. Because we are obviously subjected to public management, finance management act, performance management development, and performance management development, performance management and development systems, the PMDS policy. We uphold that, so all our staff members are on performance contract. Assessments have been done in the period under review, so we can safely say that we fully complied with that. In terms of legislative review, I've already spoken to that. Chair, our programs as Oxygen South Africa, we've got three program areas. The first program is governance and administration. The second program is boxing development, and the third one is boxing promotion. So these are the three budget areas or program areas that constitute our annual performance plan. In terms of governance and administration, I've already indicated on the annual performance plan and the annual report, as well on policy development. In terms of funded posts, out of an organogram of 14, we currently have 2 vacancies. And those vacancies are the one of a driver and a messenger. The one post is vacant because we are at labor court with the then driver that was dismissed. And the post of the receptionist, we are utilizing that post to fund a post that was established, additional to establishment. Because concurrent to this, we are also reviewing our own organogram. And then in terms of legislative review, as I indicated, Chairperson, we have developed the South African boxing regulations, which are now with the department. And I think that during this period, leading to the end of the current financial year, we will then be undertaking consultation so that ultimately these boxing regulations can then be passed. On development, sorry, I realize there's an error. It's supposed to say boxing development, not governance development. On training, for the first time in 2018-2019, we managed to achieve our targets of 301 licenses. We were trained in 5 different training platforms. And this training chair, we are thankful to SAIDS, the South African Institute for Tactical Sport, because we continue to work with them a lot in carrying out this training. Our delivery focus is on the boxers, because for some time, boxing was not... the relationship between boxing and sales was at an all-time low because tournaments would happen without sales being communicated to. So to root out this doping in boxing, we continue to roll out this training. I think in the past year, we have had about 3 or if not 4, unless you will confirm that, adverse findings with regard to boxers who have been found to have doped. And the practice is that even athlete in boxing is found to have violated anti-doping, he then handed over to South African Institute for Tactical Sport, which then administers the process until finality. And then sanctioning, we've got 79 tournaments that were sanctioned. In terms of ratings, on a monthly basis, we issue out ratings in all the 17 weight divisions, and we've continued to do that. We launched new national title belts, and also we've had 60 national title fights that were sanctioned in the field under review, with 12 of them being provincial title fights. And then there is this issue of associations, and I think maybe I must pause a little bit on this one, Chair. In terms of the Boxing Act and also the regulations, the licensees in different categories, be them promoters, boxers, trainers, managers, or ring officials, do form these associations. And one of the most vibrant associations are but associations of promoters. Chairperson will remember that in the past we used to lament here that the association in the Eastern Cape had taken a decision to protest to pay sanction fees. We spent the past year working with the association on this issue. On the 16th of June 2018, we met with the association, and Chair, we are proud and pleased to give a feedback to the committee that that standoff was since resolved. So as we speak now, our debt collection is now underway because there was a situation of these promoters that were arguing that the regulations are not being properly interpreted, and as a result, they were refusing to pay the levies that they were supposed to pay as a result of the tournament that was sanctioned. So this had a major impact on your team of financials, because you now represent the revenue that you can't collect because there are these practitioners that refuse to pay. And another thing is that this chair is part of the work that we need to do to amend the regulations, because the South African regulations are different from what the rest of the world does. In the rest of the world, when there's a tournament that takes place, whatever levies that are due to the commission get predetermined before the fight and get paid before the fight. The South African model is based on percentage-based payment and also payment after the fight. So basically, a tournament has to happen, and then after the tournament has happened, 7 days after the tournament has happened, the promoter then disperses an affidavit that says, these were my expenses, and then this is the sponsorship that I received. And out of that sponsorship, 5% has to be paid as the levy. If it is broadcast, 10% of that amount has to be paid. But the fact that it happens after the tournament is a problem, because then it creates this administration of having to run after promoters when the tournament is happening. So in the amendment that we have drafted, this issue has already been addressed to ensure that we now move it from being pro rata and after the fact to being flat rate and before the tournament gets sanctioned. The last one, Chair, is still on the association. We received a lot of negative publicity in the winter of the previous year, 2018. Two associations in the Eastern Cape fighting each other. We mediated in that, Chair. I think this, again, is one of those that we can report back to the committee, that we were able, through the assistance of the MEC in the Eastern Cape, to have a general meeting for all these promoters. And as we speak now, there's one association in the Eastern Cape where both parties participated in a democratic exercise. Those that had the majority won and those that had the minority numbers had to live with the outcome. So at this point, this is where we are with regard to the disputes that used to happen in the Eastern Cape. In Gauteng, there was again some disagreements just after May, because Gauteng was actually the best performing promoters association for some time. Around June, they also went into bickerings. But in the past Saturday, we were able again to assist them to go to an annual general meeting. And again, the new leadership there has been elected. So these are some of the things that from time to time crop up in the space of boxing, where there are disputes and intra-rivalry contestations that are necessarily not good for the sport. On the last one, Chair, governance, boxing promotion. We were able in the past year, Chair, to get a sponsorship from the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture in Gauteng, which is what we utilized to host the boxing award that took place in the Convention Center, and we are thankful to Gauteng for that. In terms of the awards, we also had the third edition of the awards that took place 17 May 2019. And then boxing broadcast, one of the major areas of focus was our inputs to the ICASA Sports Services Broadcast Regulations. So, Chair, I think it's important that we just clarify where our position as boxing South Africa is, because I think that's something that was misunderstood. Chair, we are happy that this review process of the 2010 regulations, because the 2010 regulations of ICASA, in their current configuration, have got limitations. But what we were disappointed about was that when ICASA then went to amend, instead of dealing with what are the problems, they went and dealt with what we think is what is working in the current environment. As I've already indicated, Chairperson, currently boxing in South Africa survives from a broadcast point of view mainly through the pay channel SuperSport. If that channel switches off on boxing and moves to other sporting codes, boxing will die because of broadcast blackout. We have all the time been knocking on the doors of our national broadcaster, and I think we came here many times, Jay, to indicate how many arguments we've had with the broadcaster and we were let down. And that is why we can confidently say that in the past financial year, there has not been a single live broadcast of boxing on any of the SABC platforms.
the material that gets flighted on Friday, 9/21/80 or 22/80 on the TKO is historical material. Now, sport is emotive because sport is about those goosebump moments, that suspense when you don't know who's going to win. If you've already seen it, it does not generate and create viewership. So super sport closes that gap for us. And what we then were not happy with ICASA about was because ICASA has got different categories of sporting codes, and boxing is part of those categories. A sport of national interest, which yes, we agree we are. And boxing, unlike rugby, football, cricket, we do not have a hierarchical arrangement of a single international matter. So when you take power and say at international level, international boxing federations will determine which content gets blighted, you are disempowering your own local commission. And I think, Jack, it is not intentional or malicious. I think it is an issue of practitioners who do not know the subject they are trying to regulate. And this is what we indicated, that we think your intentions are okay, but I don't think you understand us for who we are. So our plea is this. You can't, in say, a national, where there's a national title, the broadcaster can have exclusive rights, because broadcasters thrive on exclusive rights. At this point in time, boxing, the sport of boxing is not big enough for you to say that, yeah, but SuperSport, if you are broadcasting a national title fight between Magusha and Mvulani, SABC must broadcast the same thing. We are not at that point yet. Because remember, in boxing, in boxing, when you talk about national champions, we've got 17 national champions. So we've got enough content to go around for the broadcasters to share. Our problem is not demand. Our problem is the supply. So the regulations were essentially saying that even if you buy the rights for a national title fight, you can't have exclusivity around it. So our point is that we agree with the control, but it must not be at the regulations. We must be allowed to regulate that because it's a commercial space. So if what SuperSport maybe will then just do, will then say, okay, if I can't protect my market share when I buy your content, then let me rather go and trade with somebody else. And remember that in the list of the sporting codes that are in the categories, it's not very good. So you still have some of our rival sports, mixed martial arts, who are not part of that. So we will then become a victim or a casualty of being in the categories. And that's why you saw most sporting codes say, if being designated the national sporting code comes with all those limitations, you rather than not put us in the list, so that we can rather survive on commercial arrangements. But another thing that we picked up was that the regulations are not explicit on what then happens when the broadcaster does not honor the obligations. Because it does happen that your terrestrial TV, ETV, does not broadcast boxing. National broadcaster does, but not live. So the regulations don't speak about an enforcement mechanism. So basically, we are compelled to be part of these categories where we can have exclusivity when we need it, but there's no recourse or consequence management when the national broadcaster does not honor what they were supposed to. And I think that is what, Chair, from our side was the issue. And then, Chair, the next slide are really just statistics in terms of where we are. I will not go through that in detail, Chair, but this gives a sense of our licenses. As at this current financial year, end July, we've got 1,186 licenses, 688 of whom are boxers. Chair, the 95 of female licenses is a decline from the 100 licenses that we had when we closed the year. But I request the committee to know that when it comes to female licenses, we don't close. So some of our female licenses between now and end of March, they continue to take up licenses. We only close when it becomes to all men. So last year we were at 100. As at June, July, we were at 95. But I'm sure and confident that we won't get to that number of 100 and more, because there is no closing date for female licenses. It only applies in other categories. And this is a
an instrument that the board has put in place to ensure that we never shut the door of the air time when it comes to boxing. And then the next slide chair is licenses, the category just shows in terms of provincial strength. You know, chair, there is an interesting development with regard to the relationship between Gauteng and Eastern Cape. At some point, Eastern Cape was the lead province in terms of the activity, the number of tournaments and number of licenses. Gauteng then took over and started to host more tournaments, but we still had more licenses in the Eastern Cape. And then the number of licenses in the Gauteng group higher than Eastern Cape, but the boxes were in the Eastern Cape. You're now starting to see Gauteng dominating on both the number of boxers, the number of tournaments, and the number of total population. But if you retrace the boxers, most of the boxers that are in Gauteng, you can trace them back to the Eastern Cape. So there's this outward migration of opportunities because Gauteng is able to survive. The private sector relationships with promoters are keeping boxing alive. And this migration patterns are starting to show. KZN and Western Cape, the practice is still the same there. They are above 100 each. And then Limpopo, the growth is at 60. There's a steady growth of boxing in Limpopo. In the Free State, the numbers are 26. The numbers are still slightly more like they were in the past. And then, Chair, the next slide is on the number of tournaments. We just showed you, Chair, where the activity is, tournaments per year. In the year 2015-16, we had 83 tournaments. The number then went down to 75. It came up to 78 and 79. The reason this number went down from 83 to 75 is because in 2016, we started to enforce the regulations. They had in the past been incidents of some of the tournaments that happened without first money being paid or the regulations not being complied with. So when we started to tighten the systems, the numbers dropped. So this growth that you are seeing there, what did us companies that it growth that we can account for qualitatively and say none of these tournaments happen with outright violation of the regulations. And again, here, when you look at these statistics, particularly let's take the Free State. The role of MECs at this moment, provinces, very critical to the survival of boxing in the provinces because private sector assistance and sponsorship, it's still a problem for us. But provincial departments assist promoters to deliver boxing. So in the year 2017-2018, you had about 600 that took place in the Free State. That number in the past financial year went down to one. And I think we've started now to engage again with the MEC. And we are glad that the new MEC that came in May, Dimakazo, the first thing that she said was that we need to correct this ecosystem of boxing so that at least there is some minimum number which promoters in a year can safely say that we are aware that and we are confident that these numbers will grow. So this is just what level where we are. Chairperson, the next slide is just a slide of the world champions that we have. Starting with Kevin Lorena, who will be fighting now on the 21st of September. He's defending his IPO. To Lionel Bengi, unfortunately, Chairperson went to Germany and lost on the 7th of, on the 6th of July. So Misani Longeni was the WBF champion, but he was stripped of the title. Because you remember at the beginning of this year, he went and fought in the US. He lost that fight, but when he came, him and WBF could not fight each other, and then he was stripped. So Nani Tete still continues to become the champion, and he's the last one of the boxing community, the most favorite at this point. I think because of the quality of the belt that he holds, the WBO belt. Gideon Buterezi is still a champion. Morutim Talani, the baby face, is also still a world champion. Heki Butler, unfortunately, on New Year's Eve, he then lost the belt of the WBA that he had. But I'm definitely will come back. There's still a lot of fighting in him. DJ Krill, quite an inspirational story, chair, because he actually relocated to the US in pursuit of world glory. And in January, February this year, he got an opportunity to fight for a mini fly, and he became a champion. In a fight that would not be would have won, 1 point he would have lost. But he was able to create an upset to a last minute knockout and became a world champion. Simpio Concho is still a world champion there are prospects that he might be exchanging hands from the IPO to another one, but that's still under discussions. And then the three female champions that we have, Noni Tenge, Nosi Popel, and Puki Melonia. Una Tenge again is the one that Nosi Popel upset for her to become the world champion. And then Chairperson, I indicated in the beginning that we've got monthly rating that we issue. The next slide is basically just the ratings and the names of who the champions are in each category. I would then have over Chairperson with your permission to the CFO to give us the permission.
I'll cover five slides quickly, Chair. I'll quickly cover the overview and I'll cover the financial pressure points and the issues of fraud risk and internal audit and information management. As you know, Chair, the last time we were here, we have just come out of an audit process and we'll quickly highlight the salient process that the Chair have to in terms of the audit outcome that we received for the 2017-18, we have received an amplified audit. And Chair, I must say we remain inspired by SAITs for getting a clean audit. As you know, that the department and SAITs are now there. We are the ones now who have to make sure that we then follow the same track of making sure that our books are there. And this is despite all the challenges that have been referred to by the CD around the administration since 2016. Because at the present moment, we are doing everything that we can to make sure that we don't have a big file meetings and we improve on many things. Chair, we have realized a surplus. It's a small surplus for the current financial year of around 89,000, just compared to the loss that we incurred last year, which is that the budget expenditure of around 2.5 million. In terms of the action plans, that the improvements that we have, as with no share, we did not have the internal audit function. As a result, most of the reports that went to the audit committee and the reports that were going to the board were any problem because the internal audit function did not ever. What we have done in the past financial year is to ensure that we have at least an operational internal audit function. This would also help with the audit committees. This has brought in a lot of improvement on the administration of matters pertaining to fraud, matters pertaining to risk management. Because these are the matters that normally find expression in the audit report. And then if you look at our audit report this year, these are some of the improvements that have been done. We still have made improvements on the contract administration and contract management, the issues of document management and storage, because these were some of the operational matters that have been raised. If you look at the number of audit findings which were raised in the 2017-2018. And then we will also highlight the improvements on compliance matters, whether it's compliance on financials or compliance on performance or compliance with other regulations that we have. And as has already been alluded to, Chair, we are actually a public entity which has to use PFMA and its regulations, but we also have the Boxing Act and Boxing regulations that impose certain things that need to be done by promoters. For instance, the application for a tournament must be in within 30 days. It is not in within 30 days, that is a non-compliance. After 7 days after the tournament, the promoter must give us an affidavit, sole affidavit. And if they don't give you a sole affidavit, that becomes a non-compliance issue. Yes, you know that on program two, there's a lot of training that needs to be done to change the practice and the mindset whether after 7 days that the promoter can send it. So these are some of the non-compliance issues that we find, not only on the PFMA, but on the Boxing Act and Boxing Regulations. Chair, we have changed the annual performance plan which was linked to the previous strategic plan. Because when you look at our performance information, most of the things which were not set to be smart were linked to the strategic plan as a result, you couldn't just change them. These matters constituted about 42% of audit premiums that were raised every year, almost similar type of audit premiums. What we have done is two things. One is to make sure that the annual performance plan is aligned to the strategic plan, but also we had a problem with finishing our strategic plan, so the next strategic plan is more likely to be more cleaner than the one that we used to have previously. But these are some of the things we find in our pursuit of this thing on each check. We want to make sure that we are clean not only on the finances, but to make sure that our performance information is also clean. That's why I mentioned this issue of the strategic plan. There are specific issues that have been highlighted, chaired by the Auditor General. These are capacity limitations and challenges which are specifically on the liquidity issues and the going concern issues that is affecting Central Africa. And this is affected by three different things. One is the baseline adjustment issues. One is the issue of litigation that the CEO has already made reference to. The other one is the issues of revenue collections. On revenue collections, Chair, over and above the intention to change the regulation, we have also then been tasked by the board to get the services of a debt collector. A debt collector to make sure that all outstanding debtors are going to be debt collected from those promoters who owes quite considerable amount of money and have to be treated as such. So these are some of the improvements that we are putting in place. We can safely say that we have started a new thing where if, for instance, a promoter is supported or is sponsored by a department, we can even arrange with the department to pay us directly in terms of paying the promoter themselves. And these are some of the things that we are currently doing in check to make sure that we have improvements. And then there's a slide chair with figures. This slide is just showing us the financial pressures that is part of the operation that needs to be done. Improvement on the internal audit function, the issues of the inspectorate, matters to deal with the provincial line functions of VSA core function, and the issues of sanctioning and ratings. So the last one is just to show, this is a reflection of some of the actual issues that we have already started since last year to engage with the department, to show that these are the pressure points that we currently have. And then, as has already been said, Chair, we have maintained now the issues of making sure that the compliance issues in terms of our operations are done and we maintain the same thing. And lastly, it's a slide that shows the two issues, irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure. And the graphs are just showing, although we have a slight decrease in this specific issues, the intention is to make sure that we don't then have this matters at all going forward. And Chair, I think for the financial matters, these are the slides that we have initially.
Thank you. So, can you continue? This slide is really a tutorial position of the what we call the box of course, because this is what we believe needed for us to have the growth that we need. So, Chair, because I think it is important for the portfolio committee to have a sense of where we are in our continuum to improve. For boxing to be where we really need it to be, Chair, there are these different levels, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I think in the past, this issue of the law, the regulations, our 5-year strategic plan, our annual performance plan, and our financial plan, very critical. So when we talk about stabilizing the entity, we have made sure that these elements of our growth need to be taken care of. Then we work this second part, which are the things that are not necessarily under direct control of full-time office bearers and the board. These are some of the things that are services to the licensees. Our licensing processes, our sanctioning, ratings, management and development of performance programs and management of association. And I think at this point, Chair, this the second part, I think it's another one that we can safely say that we are confident about the progress that we have done in there. We are mostly at the third one. The issues of clubs, gyms, competition, career progression. In terms of our 5-year strategic plan, we were not reporting mostly on this. So I think the reason we wanted to create this ecosystem challenge is because we are now at the point where we will be doing our 5-year strategic plan for the period 2020 to 2025. So what we would love our next strategic plan to focus on is mostly on these issues that are at level 3 and level 4. So that we are clear about what is the vision for boxing, professional boxing in South Africa. Because at certain points, when I read a lot of literature that we have produced, for example, I was going through the convention resolutions of 2001. It seems as if boxing, professional boxing in that country, we still go around in some issues that were raised by the Federation in 1998. We still find ourselves dealing with them. I think this ecosystem is just so that we have a sense of what are the things that all of us in boxing should be enjoyed by and where we should be waiting for towards. The key issues for consideration, Chairperson, critical is the issue of the regulations, the issue of boxing the last first budget baseline, litigation, the matter that are in court that we are attending to, the national boxing broadcast framework, as well as stakeholder alignment. So these are the critical 5 things that we will say, Chair, because we do the work that in this financial year we are 6 weeks. Thanks.
what was the cause lead to these dismissals? DSA has an approved funded organogram of 14 posts. Currently, only two vacancies exist in the organization. And then, why are the two additional posts not on the organogram? Did the board approve the additional post? And then there is only 42 or 6% of female boxers who are licensed owners in South Africa. You also mentioned under the female licensed owners are under 25, which has declined. Why is the growth of promotion of female boxers in South Africa? And boxing is only two provinces in South Africa are boxing. Gauteng and Eastern Cape. What is the boxing South Africa doing to promote boxing in all provinces? Chair, I see all my questions that I don't have second up. How many boxing tournaments took place in the rural areas in the past year? And then the license category for the Northern Cape is very low. What are your plans to attend around of the Northern Cape? I can go.
Thank you, Chair. I would love to thank the CEO, the Jaka, and the CFO both for the very clear presentation. To me, it is like really, boxing is only 3 years old. And out of all the 79 tournaments, only 24. Actually. For me, it makes the question, what could be the reasons why boxing is being looked down by the South African broadcasting, and what can boxing South Africa do to help boxing back? Is there a body that looks at the oversight of the managers of boxers and boxing in general? And if yes, why are boxers mostly died in boxing? Boxing, I think boxing needs to be taken seriously by the government and the Department of Arts and Culture. For me, it looks like this board, the new board, has worked very hard into coming up and coming with the strategy of reviving boxing, and it looks good. But it needs to be supported by the department. Probably more money needs to be invested in boxing. Basically, with boxing, it looks like it is the most disrespected by its managers and also by this body itself. It is very clear that boxing has been operating on a very disorganized manner until this new board came to the board. So for me, it's a good action, and I think it is very clear that boxing has been as a top level boxing, at that time, I think it was few white rich people who were using boxing to make money, but
not to have it as regulated as it should be. But now, hearing what and seeing what the board has done, there is future in boxing, and it is really coming back. And I wish the new board members well. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. Thanks to the BSA for their presentation. But there are some few concerns. I wish to check with you what is it that we are doing to introduce boxing back to school sport, seeing that school sport is the one that can assist you in promoting and advancing your education of boxing. And I don't know what a PSA is. It a federation or what? If it's a federation, what is it that we are doing to promote boxing? Because, as we have said, the South African Broadcasting Corporation is not social aware that it should market you. But now it means before you go to a SA, you should come up with a strategy. What strategy are you coming up to make boxing more interesting and to make boxing have more fans in South Africa? So, also, what are you doing to include or to push it in rural areas? Thank you.
Sorry, I'm my colleagues coming on race with in regards to the school. I know it's now short notice, but can you maybe somewhere give us a breakdown on the race, within the sport, because if I look at the ratings that you provided on, I'm not sure what the slideshow number is, but the women and the men, it seems to me that it's actually more of a black sport boxing that is actually now participating. So from my side, I actually don't like the fact that we bring up race in school, especially if it looks like there's a representation. So if you can do that maybe for us, so that we can just see how it grew in the last 5 years. And then I want to ask, there's been a sharp decline in the total revenue from 2015 and 16 to the current 2018-19. What is the reason for that? And what do you do to address that? And then also, it seems that as if there's the compensation of your employees has more than doubled. What was the reason for more than 50% increase in compensation of the employees despite the accounting review? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and we also join colleagues in welcoming the presentation. Just one question on liquidity. Do you think you'll be able to overcome the liquidity question? And in terms of your projections, how long will it take for you to build that liquidity? Because as I read the statement now, unless it's wrong, it's a liquidity problem. Thanks.
So I would love to hear from themselves how far are they with the CASA submissions in order that when they come to the top of us, they must be clear about your stand, especially that this thing of the people of the sea, not broadcasting the truth. Boards, they were taking each other and caught so many litigations, but the past board before this one was taken care by the Department of Sport and Recreation. They were having nothing. They even kept them in the office of the Department of Sport and Recreation. I'm not defending the department, but I wanted to tell you when they've seen that this boxing South Africa is going nowhere, cause the litigation, the frauds, they were there. And then the board, which was only saying we can't forgotten the scene, the whole department decided to say, come to our offices, use our offices in order that you must not pay your rent, in order that you must try to manage the mess that was there. So this board now is getting on that space, which is improving, hoping for the best, that all what we are saying, when we are doing our oversight and the AG, you will be doing well than the past everybody.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think maybe as a scene set has changed, and to borrow from your words, it's important to note that after the boxing meeting of 2013, a lot of things were flipped out. And by that time, boxing South Africa had a lot of debts, for example, money collected from which were meant for the receiver of revenue and not paid over and all that. So the intervention which was done by the department was more an intervention to not to assist to recapitalize the organization, but to close the debt. So it has always been in a region that goes towards the past. Subsequent to that, disciplinary processes unfolded. The CEO was dismissed following a disciplinary hearing. The chief operations officer resigned just after being charged. The CFO resigned as well, was also dismissed. So the reasons for these dismissals came as a result of disciplinary processes. And that is why that number is very sharp. It's actually more than 50%, because it's almost 7 people out of an organization of 14. If you include even the tribe, it was the same thing, the HR manager. So all of these were disciplinary processes. Now, what makes this complicated, Chairperson, is that when you have an organization that has a lot of labor disputes, you dismiss the CEO. Part of the witnesses in the disciplinary hearing is the CFO. 4 months later, the CFO himself is dismissed. Now, when the matter goes to CCMA, the CFO, who was a witness in my dismissal, has a different posture and a different tune, and they come with all sorts of excuses why they can now justify it again. And that what complicates the litigation process, because you have this big problem of a lot of people that were charged and dismissed within a short period of time. But I guess that reason that prevailed at that time dictated that that must happen. So what the department then did, it took Boxing South Africa into sort of administration. So Boxing South Africa was hosted at the Department of Sport. The CEO acting was not paid. It means it was seconded. And the compensation of employee spike will come from there, because there were now seconded staff members who were not on the payroll of Boxing South Africa, but on the payroll of the department. Part of those services was the internal audit function. So Boxing South Africa didn't have its own internal audit function, because the audit, the internal audit unit of the department was the one performing that function. And then going through 2016,
the department said, we want to now assist DSE to build own capacity so that it must go and operate as a public entity outside, and we only come in at a point of accountability, oversight, and maybe reinforcement here and there. And like the chairperson said, the department has been quite helpful with that. But this has now started to show, because when we diagnose the problem, you know, from a distance, it's unlike when we were within the system. And I think being within the system, I'm now more convinced that some of the problems are, of course, of a financial nature, and they will require that at least BSA get assisted with recapitalization. Because part of the problems that we had, when we came in, there were two set of different boxers. We were due to plug in a tournament sanctioned by Boxing South Africa. In terms of the law, when a tournament happens and it's sanctioned by Boxing South Africa, the money payment of the boxers needs to have been received and to be in the court system. Because we sanctioned, we give a clean light and the thumbs up that all is well. So when a boxer gets out of the ring, he does not go to the promoter anymore. He comes to PSA to demand money. That happened. And we had to take from our budget now to pay those debts. And it's in excess of about 1.3. There's still a boxer who is from the Philippines. He participated in that tournament, $42,000. If you take it in currency translations of today, that's almost 620,000. So there's this mock up that the current administration have to deal with without recapitalization. So we basically spending, and I think the question of liquidity is because, having dealt with what we have dealt with, we are in court trying to recover the money from these delinquent promoters who were since suspended. But unfortunately, suspension is not enough. We need to recover the public funds that were used to reinvest and mop up after they abandoned their responsibility by not paying press money that they were supposed to pay. So I think this sort of, I'm painting this so that the portfolio committee understands why the past 3 years has been difficult, because it was about pulling an organization out of the mud, while at the same time continue to roll with the punches, because boxing administration must happen. So the issue of the female licenses and the decline. The reason for the decline is because it's one thing for a boxer to take up a license. And how much does a typical boxer pay to take up a license on an annual basis? It's 250 rands. If it is a late application, it's 300 rands in a year. Now, that boxer, that is not guaranteed that he will have a tournament opportunity. There are boxers who take up licenses, and 12 months later, they still have not had an opportunity to fight in the ring. So your guaranteed revenue for or from that boxer is just that. Now, when you have 300 rands, and we sit with insurers and say, you know, we are worried about boxers who die poor, how do we create a fund that when a boxer is tired, we can contribute something? When a boxer is injured, we can contribute something for medical rehabilitation. When the boxer is retired and ultimately is in a state of proper, we can intervene. From the revenue we collect from the boxers, if it's 250 per annum, that's a little less than 20 rand per annum. It's too small. The funds were last reviewed in 2008, and we are now in the process of introducing the new funds. And obviously, there's a pushback from the sector because they claim the economic crunch, but you know, it's very tough now. We don't have sponsorship. So we continue to deal with these things, but as a result, it pains us that at this point in time, the responsibility for a boxer's insurance or savings beyond life in the ring are a boxer's own responsibility, and the commission is not able to intervene, except the fact that we've developed business plans. But when we look at the money we need to lay off on an annual basis, it's unfortunately at this point not affordable. And then on the provinces that where boxing took place, I used just Eastern Cape and Gauteng as examples, but boxing continued to take place across the country, but at different intensities. Gauteng is high up there, as well as Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo. But in the Northern Cape, when you look at the population of boxing, it's 6 in there. And at some point, it was 0. We didn't have a licensee in 2015.
We had to go in there and got a promoter, and the value chain is starting to grow. But we are in negotiations with the department because those are our critical allies. And that is why in the five election points at the end of the slide, we said stakeholder alignment and provinces. Because in the absence of strong provincial structures, our work on the ground becomes very thin because you touch and go, but you are unable to follow through properly. So the important things that we are doing is to work with the provinces, but at the same time is to look at this act, which we believe need to be amended, and the good elements of the erstwhile Act of 1954, we need to retain them, because if it gave us provincial commission, that's something that we need to have retained. Other than the fact that in Northern Cape there are six licenses, in the past year, the last tournament that we had in the Northern Cape was in 2016 June. So we have not had a lot of activity in there, and that's why we are discussing with the province around that. Chair, in terms of the question on tournaments that are taking place in rural areas, I would request, Chair, because we didn't circulate the copies of our annual report, but in the annual report we actually have a breakdown of all tournaments, day, time, venue, province, which shows where boxing activity takes place. So I think members will be able to pick up there that these are the areas. Then, naturally, your major tournaments will take place in your prime venues, casinos, Emperor's Palace, ICC in East London. But you still have a lot of small tournaments that take place, and we call them development tournaments, that take place in rural areas. But I don't have the exact percentage at this point that I can say this percentage thereof is what will constitute rural. So, but that slide, I think, Chair, through the Secretary, we can just share it with the members. The reasons for SABC's posture on boxing broadcast, to be honest, is ethical. Some of it is operational stuff, but some of it, I think, is just issues of ethics. We have complained a lot about people that see boxing as a quick, non-direct bet. Because, remember, in boxing, money that gets paid goes to the promoter, who is a private company. Does not go to an entity. The promoter's responsibility is only to receive the money and declare a percentage thereof. So, for people that are naughty, some of them see boxing as a favorable thing, because you can then have these naughty things of back-to-back things. And if you look at the cost of delivering a boxing tournament, I was shocked myself at some point to see what the money is going to spend. Because if you know that the typical boxing tournament can be delivered for a million, and you look at the patterns of what you used to obtain in the past, that value has not all of it truthfully accrued to the real people that do the job, which are the boxes. So when we started to clamp down on that, you saw a pattern of people not finding it attractive anymore. But at the second level again, and maybe just to stay with this point, Chairperson, I mean, we have been in instances where in our engagement with the administration in SABC, they will tell us that they receive instructions that, listen, there's this promoter that you must fund to this level for the tournament. So the broadcast rights, there was no proper process of how the broadcast rights are acquired and what is the ballpark for a venue of a broadcast rights. So we went into a workshop with SABC. We agreed on a framework, we call it the Boxing Broadcast Framework, which had six pillars. SABC went on national roadshows to workshop. And then they called out the target that, okay, we'll have 12 live broadcasts in a year, so if you're interested, apply. And then that process went, and just somewhere it was abandoned. So, quite honestly, Chair, it became also frustrating to us, because you can imagine, when you are CEO of an entity and you tell all your licensees, 91 promoters, that guys, please talk with this open half to Auckland Park to sell broadcast rights. There's a process that we are working on where all of you will participate equally, equitably, transparently, and on tariffs that are known. And then when other people wait for the process, they just see their counterparts' tournament on television is making money. They then start losing confidence in the leadership that you guys, you are either in collusion with this nasty practice or you are just too idiotic to stop it. So out of those, then the process just, you know, for whatever reason, it stalled. And in the past year, we haven't even had constructive engagement because then there was also a high turnover of managers at SABC. At some point within a period of about 2 years, there have been about 4 different managers. You know, the one manager comes, he gets fired, the one comes, he leaves, and all that. So I think those are some of the problems that in our view would say led to where we are. But the response to the problem is the National Boxing Broadcast Framework, which we developed with SABC, we workshopped, and we were just supposed to implement. And I think maybe, Chair, in terms of the support from the department, the slide that CFO presented and he called financial pressure points, those are things that we have engaged with the department on and requested assistance. And then the National Treasury's view was that there's not going to be any new money from National Treasury for the purpose. But the department's position was that it will reprioritize to assist us with debt because these are precious debts, are compliance precious. If our controls are to improve, we need internal audit capacity. We can't not budget for auditor general fees because those are compliance fees. So these are things that we've been dealing with the department, and we are hopeful that we will get that assistance. We are to meet the minister, we've already shared with the minister these pressures as well. So we remain hopeful about that. The racial dynamics in the boxing, I think, honourable member, I do not have that, but I think we can work on that and just get a sense of what is the racial profile in terms of percentages for boxers, for trainers, for managers. But I think, you know, in boxing, because when you look at the historical evolution of boxing, boxing is one of those few sporting codes which even during the repressive times of apartheid, you still continue to have a lot of interracial engagement. So in terms of our reporting, we really have not prioritized that type of reporting. But I think it's because of governance requirements, we will do that, Chair. We can just bring the statistics of in our pool of licenses, this is how much we have, and so on. Now, Chair, there's one thing that we always have to clarify, and I request that I do that. There is professional boxing and there is amateur boxing, what is called open boxing. Professional boxing is not part of your boxing activity that will lead to your Commonwealth Games, your All Africa Games, and your Olympics. We deal with professionals who fight for prize money. Amateur boxing is controlled by SANABO, and they are the ones who are responsible for team selection and team delivery at multinational sporting activities like Olympics. But we have a relationship with SANABO. We have actually met with them to reinforce them. So we deal with only boxers who are above the age of 18 years. But part of what SANABO is working on through our assistance is to work with the Department of Basic Education on the department's posture on combat sport. You remember that at some point, the Department of Sport, the Department of Basic Education took a posture of not allowing combat sports within the school system. And you could now start seeing the decline of boxing. And by combat sport, I'm talking about like your boxing, your karate, and all that. So even during the national sport championship of the national department, when amateur boxing happens, it does not happen through school structures. It happens through community structures. And I think there's a policy disjuncture there that needs to be sorted out, because maybe at some point the view was that combat sport is too dangerous, too risky, and that is why that. But I think it's something that can actually be attended to. The issue of liquidity, CFO will conclude on that, but in terms of the biggest challenge regarding our liquidity, it has been firstly because of revenue that was not collected. Now, in terms of revenue that was not collected, we're talking about there is the grant that we get from the department, there is money that we get through licensing, and there is money that we get through sanction fees. Now, sanction fees are where the tournament happens, there's an X amount that gets paid. For the longest time, you had promoters who declared but that money was not collected because they would refuse to pay the whatever that was supposed to be paid in terms of sanction fees. In the past year, we've been able to turn that around, and you can see now that the collection is going up. But do I think that that alone can address the problem? I do not think so, because BSA will still need assistance, most especially from the department, with regard to litigations, the cases. Because Auditor General's issue was that if these cases that you are in court today defending, if you lose it, will you have money to pay that? And the reality is that we will not. So in our previous engagements with the minister, in this case, it was the minister chose to get us because I'm talking about incident that happened after January when the former CEO was invaded. The minister said, well, we need to help you to at least mock up these cases because these are mostly matters that received 2015 part. Just ensure that in your management, you do not continue to contravene any of the regulations or to end up in labor disputes that then create new matters. And I think that is what we try to do. Just to ensure that we stabilize, but at the same time, we take care of whatever else that was there and is currently in our case. So, maybe, Chair, through you, I would request that CFO if you just answer from the financial point of view.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, I think we have done an assessment of the security problem for the past 5 years going backwards, and we have done the projections of whether are we able to get out of it in the next couple of years. And we can safely say that at the present moment, we are at a point where after going through, because the issue was, what do you do with an existing debt that has been long and has never been collected? So what we are going to do is to appoint the debt collector to deal with the outstanding debt, because we don't necessarily have the capacity to chase after everyone to go get them. But the going forward, it means that when you have a long outstanding debt, we can force you to pay part of it first and not allow you to continue, which is in itself a very difficult thing. But I think for now we can provide additional information regarding how we intend them to have strategies to make sure that we don't have a liquidity problem. Thank you.
To chip them in. Yeah, that's why I've forgotten that I must apologize to Saints, because the reality is that we didn't want to have a day that we can't have something to get. So thank you so much. And the meeting is adjourned.
I did ask the permission from the
first check is off to Mogadam, we must go and attend the memorial service of Chester, and which is approved.